Who are the real people we consider our sages? Who were they in life? What is the legacy they left us? Join Rabbi Danny Sackstein for the next hour as he explores the lives of our Torah giants, the spiritual geniuses who shaped the way we approach Judaism today. That's Focus on Our Sages right now on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Soul to Soul. Always wonderful to be with you at this time on a Wednesday afternoon, a chilly Wednesday afternoon. And this is the time of year when we read from the Torah so many fascinating and incredible stories, incidences, situations that the Torah records. And they all are prototypes and paradigms of life, of human beings, of personalities, of the challenges and struggles that we all face in our lives. They all have great relevance to our journey and to the particular ordeals that we face in our lives. So let's try to shed some light on the wonderful wisdom we learned from the Torah and the powerful lessons that we're reading about right now. So first I want to share with you a beautiful insight of the Nesiv Shalom. Nesiv Shalom was one of the great Hasidic masters of the 20th century. He left Europe. He left Poland and was sent from Slonim to Eretz Israel to set up a yeshiva of Slonim in the land of Israel. And when he arrived before the independence of the State of Israel in the 1930s, it was obviously very difficult and things were not simple at all under the British mandate. Yet he did form a yeshiva. He first was employed by the Lubavitch yeshiva in Jerusalem, and then he developed his own yeshiva, the Slonim yeshiva, and that really became the mainstay and foundation of building of Slonim after the Holocaust and the destruction of European Jewry. And the Nesiv Shalom became one of the great Hasidic masters of the 20th century. He wrote this magnificent sefer, which has such beauty and depth and clarity, and it's studied across the spectrum of the Jewish world. So one doesn't only have to be a chassid or snonim a chassid, but even in all of the Litvak yeshivas, in all of the Ashkenazi yeshivas, Nesiv Shalom is a mainstay and one of the Musa classics that's studied today, both on the Parsha and on the Mo'adim and on Jewish fundamentals. Nesiv Shalom points out a beautiful insight into the issue of the miraglim, of the spies. We just read last Parsha Shlach Lecha, of the spies that were sent into the land by Moshe. In fact, it was requested by the people. Moshe didn't want it, but he gave in to this demand of the people, and the spies went on a reconnaissance mission of the land of Israel. They return, and there were 12 of them, each of them great people, leaders in their own rights, and they return with a negative report. They are pessimistic, they are concerned, they are frightened, and they share these sentiments with the people, and the people respond in an absolute panic, and the people despair, and the only two of the 12, Yehoshua and Caleb, try to lift the people and shift it to be a more positive report. And they, Yehoshua and Caleb, said, Toiva aretz ma'od ma'od. The land is very good. Now, what are they referring to? The land is very good. Obviously, it's not a material description of the land, because these are holy spiritual people, people that stood at Mount Sinai. They're referring to, obviously, some spiritual attributes of the land of Israel. And Nesiv Shalom says, and this is a hint to the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Ma'od ma'od have shval ruach, that you should be exceedingly humble, very humble. So just like tova aretz ma'od ma'od, you see the ma'od ma'od very, very. So the ma'od ma'od is, it's a link to, a connection to that Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. So the Nesiv Shalom says, what is the connection to the goodness of the land and our need to be humble? And explains very powerfully and very deeply. And we will return shortly with that beautiful explanation.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
We're discussing the amazing idea of the holy and awesome Nesiv Shalom, the great Slonim Rebbe. He describes a very interesting connection between that which Yeshua and Caleb said, ha toiva aretz ma'od ma'od, to the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, ma'od ma'od have shafal ruach, be exceedingly humble. And explains the following way, that he says a klal, a rule, an axiom in Torah, and that is all of Torah and mitzvahs are in order that a person clings to Hashem, connects with Hashem, has a relationship with Hashem. So all of the Torah and mitzvahs are designed to take us to that place and to achieve that goal of connecting with God. The Nesiv HaShalom quotes the Zohar. The Holy Zohar says that all of the mitzvahs, all 613 mitzvahs, are 613 eitzes, 613 pieces of advice of how to connect with Hashem, 613 ways of making that connection with the divine, with God, with the creator of the universe. The Mesidus Sharim tells us that the purpose of our existence in this world is lehit aneg al Hashem, is in order to delight in Hashem, v'le'anos miziv ha-shchinasoy, and to bask in the glow of Hashem's shchina. Now, the Mesidus Sharim says that's a purpose of why we are alive and in this world, is in order that we'll achieve this level of delighting in Hashem and basking in God's glow. And the Mesidus Sharim explains, the great Mesidus Sharim, which was written by the Ramchal of Moshe Chaim Zotto, he explains that life, we are placed in this world, in this physical material world, in which we have many challenges. And our goal is to succeed in achieving the level of basking in the glow of Hashem. Now, the true place of basking in God's glow and in delighting in God is, of course, the next world, is Olam Haba, when we leave this world and when we go over to the other side. So that's the place of true spiritual light, where God's light is not masked and not limited, but shines bright. And the purpose of our existence here is in order that we could have a place in the next world for eternity in which we bask in the glow of Hashem's light. But it's not so easy. One has to first come to this world, and one has to earn one's stripes. One has to go through the many tests and challenges that God sends us in this world, all of them in order to try and divert us, to try and distract us, to try and pull us away from this goal. But ultimately, the purpose of everything is to cling to God and to develop a spiritual level where we'll be able to be near God in the next world, to bask in the glow of Hashem. So, but it's not easy. We're on enemy territory. We're in a physical material world. We're locked into this body, and this body is physical and has physical needs and desires. And in order to be able to succeed in this journey, to rise above the mundane physical existence and dimension of this world, one has to hold on, of course, to Torah mitzvahs, which is the pathway to achieve it. But Nesiv HaShalom says that God gives us some secret weapons, that although we are, yes, on away ground, and we are, the odds are against us because it's a very material physical world, but nonetheless, there are some secret weapons that God gave us in order to succeed in this challenge, in this struggle, in this battle. And he says those secret weapons are in the different dimensions of our existence. The dimension of time, the dimension of space, and the dimension of what he calls nefesh, of the dimension of the spirit. Each one of those realms has a secret weapon, a nuclear weapon, that enables us to succeed in our mission and journey in this world. The secret weapon of the dimension of time, I'll leave it to our listeners to work that out. So maybe you can send in the answer. So the first ones to send in the answer, we will announce on the radio. You can WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019 or SMS us 34519. What is the secret weapon that transforms us in the dimension of time? So we'll wait for those answers to come in. But in the meantime, let's move on and discuss the secret weapon in the dimension of space. So that the power that God gives us, the edge that God gives us in the struggle of between spiritual and physical, between the body and the soul, in the dimension of space, is Eretz Yisrael, is the land of Israel. And the secret weapon in the dimension of nefesh is Torah and mitzvahs. The Torah and mitzvahs, they help transform our soul and make our soul strong. They are actually the gym workout of the soul. That's when we connect ourselves to Torah, when we learn Torah, and we observe mitzvahs. That strengthens the soul, ensures the soul is dominant, and it helps the soul override our lowly physical being, which is our reality here in this world. So let's now emphasize and look at what this dimension of space, the spiritual weapon of the dimension of space, is Eretz Yisrael. So still, have any WhatsApps come in, Craig? No. Okay, we'll put the question out there one more time. What is the secret weapon in the dimension of time that God gave us? What is this incredible gift that elevates us within the dimension of time and helps us live spiritual lives in which we don't get lost in the flood of the material world, but we rise above the material world? There's something in time that enables us to do that successfully and ensure that there's dominance to the soul. In space, we said that that secret weapon is Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, the way the Tana D'Bnei Eliyahu puts it, is that it's the truma of the world. In other words, the Torah law is when a person brings in their crop, when a person harvests their crop and they have their yield for the year, so the vast majority of that, 95%+ of that, is for a person's own use, to sell on the market, to consume themselves. But a small proportion, around about 3%, is what's tithed, is trumas and maestros. And those tithes then now become hektish, they become holy, they become property of Hashem. So likewise, just as we have to give tithes in terms of our produce, and we give tithes in terms of our income, we should be giving maaser kesafim, 10% of our after-tax income, we should be giving to tzedakah, to charity. So likewise, there's a tithe in the world. And the tithe of the world is the Eretz Yisrael. God created the whole world. And that which is hektish, which is holy, which is elevated above all other parts of this world, is the land of Israel. And the land of Israel is a place where, what does it mean it's holy and it's elevated? It means God's presence is felt there more than anywhere else. The pasuk says, V'yomer Hashem El Avram, Lech lecha mi'atzcha, mi'uladetecha, mi'beis avicha, el ha'aretz asher ereka. Go from the land where you were born, from your father's house, to the land. We usually translate that asher ereka, that I'll show you. But the Sforno says, we don't see anywhere in the Torah that God showed Abraham this is the land. What do we see? We see that God appeared to Abraham. Asher ereka means not the land that I'll show you, but rather the land that I'll appear to you. And when God first appears to Abraham in Elon Moreh, he says, this is the land that you will inherit and you will pass down to your children for future generations. So, and then Abraham knew that this was the right place, because God told Abraham, I will send you to the land. You must go to the land that I'll appear to you. And that's the power of Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, God appears to us, that we can see God in a much more powerful, clearer, almost tangible way in Eretz Yisrael, much more than we can anywhere else in the world. We do have an answer to our question. What is the secret weapon in the dimension of time that lifts us from this mundane physical world and helps us focus on spirituality? And that is Shabbos. Thank you to Kim for sending in the right answer. Well done. Correct. The answer is Shabbos. Shabbos is that reality of time where every Shabbos, every seventh day, we enter into a whole different dimension, and we enter into a spiritual experience, an island of spirituality that lifts us from the mundane world and connects us to God. And we can, those of us that are fortunate enough to be Shomer Shabbos, and everybody who's Shomer Shabbos who's listening to this can relate to what I'm saying, is we feel a whole different reality on Shabbos, and we feel a whole different spiritual dimension, and we raise ourselves to connect to eternity. And that's almost palpable on Shabbos. You feel that holiness and that tranquility and that beauty and that purity and the connection to God and eternity. Every Shabbos we feel that, because every Shabbos we remind ourselves that God created the world in 6 days, and the seventh day God stopped. God abstained from creative activity. We do the same, and we acknowledge and show that we subscribe to the fact that God created the world. Once we don't keep Shabbos and we abstain from creative activity, and that displays that we believe that God created the world according to this pattern, So then we show that we believe in God. That's an indication we believe in God. Once we believe in God, everything else falls into place. So then we're in this world to serve God and fulfill the mission that God laid out for us. So Shabbos really gives us that spiritual edge. Once a week, every seventh day, we enter into this new spiritual zone, this island of spirituality, reminds us who we are, reminds us that God created the world, reminds us our purpose and function in this world is to connect to God and to serve God. So that's in the dimension of time. In the dimension of space, it's Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, God appears to us much more boldly, if one can say such a thing, in a much clearer way, much more powerful way than anywhere else in the world. And those who have been merited to live in the land of Israel and have worked on this can testify that that's certainly the case. One feels God's presence much more powerfully in Israel. So let's now relate it back to how we started. In other words, this gift of God appearing to us in the land of Israel is not a free gift. We have to work for it. We have to earn it. How do we earn it? We earn it by being ma'od ma'od shval ruach, by being humble. When we are humble, so then we allow space for God to enter into our world, and then we see God, and that's more powerful in Eretz Yisrael than it is in any other place in the world. So the work in Eretz Yisrael is to constrain ourselves and allow for space for God to enter. As it says, we know that the Gemara in Sota says that God says that if somebody is arrogant, so there's no space for me and them in the world. When a person is arrogant and egocentric and self-centered, so there's no space for anybody else, let alone God, in that person's world. Sometimes we all come across arrogant people, and they're just so full of themselves and their business and their children and their lunch and their story that there's really no space for anybody else, and there's no space for God either. So that's what God says. When a person's arrogant and so full of themselves, there's no space for me. So in Eretz Yisrael in particular, that's highlighted. Eretz Yisrael, the place where God appears to us in a more powerful way than anywhere else. But we have to do the work of being humble. We have to be ma'od ma'od shval ruach. As the Mishnah says, we have to control ourselves, constrict ourselves, hold ourselves in, make boundaries to ourselves, and then there's space for Hashem. Hashem enters into that space, and that's an incredible experience to see God, where God appears to us. It happens also out of Israel, but much more powerfully in the land of Israel. And says in Siv Shalom, that, and by the way, very interestingly, that's why it's called Eretz Canaan. Don't know if you've ever thought about that. Why is it called Eretz Canaan? The land of Canaan, we call it, right? Eretz Canaan. It's Canaan because it comes from the word hachna. Hachna means to subdue oneself, to humble oneself, to submit oneself. So we humble ourselves in the presence of God. We submit ourselves to God with hachna, the Eretz Canaan, and then we experience God's presence in a very deep and powerful way. So that's the beauty, that's the gift, that's the opportunity of Eretz Yisrael in the dimension of space. And unfortunately, the spies, the Meraglim, that was their error. Because the Torah says, V'kulam anashim roshei b'nei Yisrael hema. All of these people were heads of the Jewish people. They were heads of the tribes. They were leaders in their own right. They were great people. The problem was, though, it went to their head, and they didn't humble themselves. And so when they went into the land, they went in with an attitude and with a self-centeredness, and they were egocentric. That was their attitude, and they didn't create space. They didn't pull themselves back and create space for Hashem. And so they saw a rough land, a tough land. They saw people dying all over in the land. They saw the big fruits. They saw the giants. They had a purely physical experience. They didn't pull themselves back and experience God's presence in a powerful way. And that's what Yehoshua and Caleb were saying. Yehoshua and Caleb were saying, Haaretz toiva ma'od ma'od. It's very good if you are a ma'od mol shval ruach, you lower yourself and you allow space for Hashem, you'll experience Hashem in an incredible way, in a powerful way, in a tangible way, in a way that you won't experience God in anywhere other place in the world. And that is the most important thing. That's the richest opportunity you have. That's a gold mine and a treasure that Eretz Yisrael offers us. And that's why we see those that are tuned into this frequency and are doing this work and are humble, they experience God in a powerful way. And although Eretz Yisrael is hard, Yisrael doesn't come easy. Nothing comes easy in Eretz Yisrael, but it's well worth it when one controls oneself and makes oneself humble and experiences God in a beautiful, holy way. And one sees that very much with spiritual people in Eretz Yisrael. But if we're too arrogant, we see, this is a tough place to be, and we leave the land. And that's why, unfortunately, many people leave Eretz Yisrael, because they don't experience the spiritual elevation and heart that it offers us. So that was the fault of the Meraglim, that they were Roshei B'nai Yisrael, but it went to their heads, and they didn't humble themselves, and therefore they missed that spiritual power of the land of Eretz Yisrael, which I think is such a valuable lesson for us. And it tells us, you know, how we need to work on ourselves and not run away with our arrogance. The natural default position of a person is to be self-centered and to be caught up within oneself and to be preoccupied with oneself. But we need to consciously hold ourselves back. We need to consciously draw those boundaries and allow for others to enter into our space and into our world. And of course, allow for God to do so. And when we do that, it's a different experience. Life is different. Life is so much more fulfilling. Life is so much more enriching. And there's a light and a purpose and a meaning which we don't achieve when we remain in this natural state of arrogance and self-centeredness. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
Let's move on now to some other powerful and valuable lessons we can learn from the Torah readings that we are currently going through right now. This week, this Shabbos, we read Parshas Korach. Parshas Korach is just an incredible episode in the Torah, and there's so much to take from it, which is relevant to all of us. Perhaps the most dramatic part of it is the fact that 220 people supported Korach. Korach rises up and rebels against the leadership of Moshe and Aaron. But he doesn't do so in a vacuum. Korach waits till after the incident of the spies, depending on which Rishonim you go by in terms of the order. Korach waits until Moshe, the people are told they're going to die in the desert, which they're not too happy about. He waits until Moshe and Aaron are vulnerable, and then he makes his move. But first, he makes sure that he has sufficient support. And he was a good politician. He was able to garner the support of 250 people. And they're not just 250 ordinary, regular people. They are Nesim. They're all leaders within their relative tribes. And they are Anshei Gedolim, the Torah says. They are great people. These are all people of accomplishment, people who are looked up to and are successful, leaders within the people. And they now support Korach in his rebellion against Moshe and against Aaron. The Midrash Rabbah says, Moshe says to them, that Moshe then approaches these people that are supporting Korach, and he says to them and Korach, he says, only one person, he says, we're going to have a test. We'll have a test tomorrow. Everybody bring your pan. In the pan, they put an offering to Hashem that they would burn up, an incense offering that would burn up. And, Moshe said the offering that is accepted by Hashem will be, that person will be the true leader, the true Kohen Gadol, the true person who carry out the service of Hashem in the Mishkan, in the sanctuary. Because that's what Korach was challenging. He said, you the leader, and Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, and so it's nepotism, it's just you and your family, and that's not fair. The Rashi tells us, based on the Midrash, the real reason why Korach was rebelling was because he was jealous that his cousin was appointed by Moshe as the leader of the tribe of Levi, and he felt he should have been, he was the next one in line after Aaron to then take the third position of leadership, which would be the leader of the tribe of Levi. So that's why Korach was put out. Hashem told Moshe to select Korach's cousin and not to select Korach. But nonetheless, this is what got Korach going and why he staged this rebellion. So Moshe tells the people, listen, you're all going to bring this, you all are welcome tomorrow to bring your offering to Hashem. The one that Hashem selects will be the correct, the legitimate leader, the one that Hashem wants to, the one to carry out the service in the sanctuary. Now, isn't that a massive gamble? That all of them said, fine, no problem. We accept these rules. We accept your challenge and deal me in. We prepare to take the risk. Now, these are people that were at Mount Sinai. These are people that saw Hashem talk to Moshe. And they still said, no, we're going to do it. We're going to go for it. You know, picture it. There's a person who's addicted to gambling and he's lost his wife. He's lost his children. He's lost his job. He's lost his house. He's lost his car. He's lost everything. But he says, this time is different. This time I'm going to win. This time the odds in my favor. That's how a person who's addicted to gambling behaves and thinks. So isn't it a similar thing over here? You know, they're taking a gamble, these guys. Moshe said, only one of you is going to be chosen. Everybody else is going to die. The stakes are the highest that they possibly could be. A person who brings an offering and it's not accepted by Hashem, he's going to die. That's how those are the rules. Those are the terms of this challenge. And they all accept it. The only one who got it, the only one who saw, who behaved in a sensible fashion, was the wife of On Ben Peles. On Ben Peles was one of these leaders that joined the ranks of Korach and his rebels. And the wife of On, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, went to her husband and she said, why are you getting involved in this? Either way, you're not going to come out on top. Either the leader is going to be Aaron or the leader is going to be Korach, but you're going to be second. So why put yourself at risk? Why even take the chance and enter into this potentially fatal challenge that Moshe is putting to? And so she convinced him to stay home, and that saved his life. But everybody else, that we see that they were involved, and we see that their offering was not chosen, and they all died. And not only did they die, but they suffered in Gehenna, in the fires of Gehenna, of what we call hell, for centuries. The Gemara in Bava Basra says that Rava Bar Bar Chana was walking in the desert, and a Bedouin said to him, you want me to show you? You want to see something impressive? Called him and took him to a place, put his ear to the ground, and Rava Bar Bar Chana heard the voices saying, Moshe emes v'toyrasel emes, that Moshe is true and his Torah is true. That was 2,000 years later. So we see that there was this supernatural, incredible phenomenon that brought about their deaths, and they still didn't receive a kapara. They were still in the ground 2,000 years later. So isn't it strange that the people would go for this, that the people would fall for this? It's just a tremendous risk. Why would they take the risk? It doesn't seem to make any sense. It seems to be that they were meshuga, they were crazy. They did something, they had the mindset of a gambler, which is, we all know, is not rational and not normal. So why did they do such a thing? Okay, so I just want to mention in parentheses, very briefly, why the consequence was so severe. It was such a terrible avera, what they were involved in, because they were undermining Emunas Chachamim and the Mesorah. They were challenging and belittling the tradition that we have. They saw Moses received the Torah at Mount Sinai, and they rebelled against that. And all of the Jewish religion is based on Moshe Kibbul Torah Misina, as the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, that Moshe received the tradition from God and then handed it down to the sages and through the generations. They challenged the very basis of our religion. Everything is built on that. And Moshe received it, and it's legitimate and genuine, and then it's passed down in a complete and pure way through the generations. Once they challenged that, they undermined the whole fundamental basis of the Torah, which is the most severe sin of all. And that's why the reaction was so severe, and that's why they died through a phenomenon that had never been seen before, and they still, after 2,000 years, are over there. But let's try and understand it a little bit more deeply, get a bit of a deeper understanding. Rav Yerucham, who's the great Mashkiach of the Meir Yeshiva, I heard this from Rabbi Elephant, who's one of the great rabbis of the Meir Yeshiva today in Jerusalem. He quotes Rav Yerucham, who says the following. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that if you want to see an example of a machloikas l'shem shemaim, look at the machloikas of Hillel and Shammai. And a machloikas lo l'shem shemaim, you'll see from Korach v'Adaso, Korach and his followers. So that Mishnah is difficult to understand, because why isn't, don't we say that Hillel and Shammai were a million miles away from Korach? That Korach was somebody who was filled with jealousy and filled with anger, and he rebelled against Moshe. How could we even compare him to Hillel and Shammai and say, oh, they're very similar? There's just one subtle difference, that Hillel and Shammai were for the sake of heaven and Korach was not for the sake of heaven. That seems to be a very incongruous comparison between the two. But the answer is that it actually, well, once the Mishnah says it, it must be, but it is an accurate comparison, because Korach was actually a very great person. Korach was somebody who, he had nevuah, had prophecy. Through his prophecy, he saw that from his lineage, from his descendants, would be the great prophet Samuel. Shmuel Hanavi would come from him. Korach was an Adam Gadol. He was a Noise Aaron. He carried the Aaron. He had Ruach HaKodesh. He had divine inspiration. So he was a great and powerful person. And he thought that he was 100% Hashem Shemaim. So the machloikas of Hillel and Shammai is very comparable to Korach machloikas, because there were many similarities. The only difference was, really, if you drill down to the core, you'll see that Korach wasn't Hashem Shemaim. But he thought he was. If you asked Korach and you asked any of his followers, why are you doing this? I'll say, we're doing it for the sake of heaven. 100% we're right, for the sake of heaven. So the future of the Jewish people, it's to ensure that the Torah will live and be passed down in an authentic way through the generations. They thought they were 100% legitimate and real. Korach and all of his followers thought so, but they went wrong. So stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. We'll see the subtle mistake that they made, how they went wrong, and how relevant that is to all of us.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
We're saying that Korach and his followers were great people. They all had tremendous potential and power. They were really nuclear, each and every one of them. And they weren't ordinary, regular people. They were leaders, and they were accomplished individuals. However, they had, so we are, maybe don't have the power of Korach and his followers in terms of our potential, but we definitely have the same midas. The midas, which means the character traits that they had, which led them astray, which led them off the path, to make this fatal error. So that's something that's relevant and real in all of us. We all have the same characters. We all we have within us those tendencies for kinah, taiva, and kavod, for jealousy, for physical pleasure, and for the pursuit of power and glory. And those things very much shape how we behave and the choices that we make. And we see that Korach and his followers were blinded by their midas, by their bad. Although they were great people, although they had tremendous potential, when they were led astray by their bad character traits, so the result was catastrophic. The result was fatal. And it was like a nuclear explosion. Like, imagine Iran with nuclear weapons. That'll make the world a very dangerous place. It'll put every citizen in the world in peril. For sure. There's no question about it. We can't allow them to get nuclear weapons, because nuclear weapons that go wrong, they can cause tremendous destruction. So that's what happened with the Korach and his followers. They were all powerful individuals, each one a nuclear reactor. And when they went slightly off the path, in other words, they followed their midas, which were not true and not l'shem shemaim and not pure, so it resulted in the disaster of them being swallowed up by the ground and being killed. But I want to leave you with one incredible idea, which really is a powerful lesson for all of us, and something that I think we could learn from this, and it could change us. We see that the children of Korach, the Bnei Korach, the Tshuva, the children of Korach actually repented. We know that Moshe warned the people, move away from Korach and his followers, and then the ground began to open up, and they all fell. The ground swallowed them up. And as they were on their way down, the children of Korach then had second thoughts. It says that they couldn't even talk. It was all just too much and too traumatic. But it says, rachash, rachash libam, that they had this feeling in their heart of regret, that they had done the wrong thing. And suddenly a peace jutted out where they were standing and never went down any further. It went up and everything else went down and they were saved. Just from that rachash rachash libam, that's feeling in their heart that they were wrong and that they had made a mistake and that Moshe Emes or Torasa Emes, that was the game changer. And that resulted in them doing tshuva. And from that we see Shmuel Hanavi was descendants of those children of Korach. Shmuel was equal to Moshe and Aaron. Our sages teach us that he was so great. So we say if one goes off slightly and one has great potential, which we all have, so then that's going to cause destruction of a mammoth nature. But if one mida tova meruba, the measure of good is more. In other words, if we move in the right direction from our midas or from an inner spiritual awakening, so that's going to be a great thing for us. Just like we see with the children of Korach, and in fact, every Rosh Hashanah we say Lam Natzeach Nivei Korach Mizmor before we blow the shofar, we remember them for all time. They did tshuva and they were able to salvage their bad situation. Just from small movements towards Hashem, and the same applies to all of us. Even if we make small steps, and we just have, we're about to say something, but we stop ourselves saying it because it's Lashon Hara. And Shabbos, we take a step, a small step towards keeping Shabbos and not breaking Shabbos. Just, you know, we hold ourselves back here and there even small steps towards kashrus, towards tznius, towards taras hamishpacha, towards being honest in business. If we have just a little movement of rachash, rachash libam, so that has a tremendous impact and effect. And that, if we turn to Hashem, Hashem will always turn back to us because Hashem is always waiting and always listening. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.